For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What we've got here is failure to communicate.
Freedom. Freedom! Well, sign away my freedom. Why, this is ridiculous.
Don't be corny, brother.
Sure, our system of free enterprise isn't perfect. But before we throw it away for some imported double talk, let's turn the clock back a few years to see what it's done for us.
With your host, Mike Paul.
So this episode is starting a little behind schedule. I mean, it doesn't matter by the time you guys hear this. You won't know any of that shit happened. But Mike here had to reboot his computer. So Tyler and I were in the conference room here talking Star Wars. And I have no idea if the people that listen to this podcast, our listeners, will think that we're fucking nerds or if they're right on board with us. But we were talking about how terrible the sequel trilogy was, but about how good the animated series are. And I know that makes you sound like a nerd bitch, but it's true. So, you know what? Vampire Diaries and Star Wars The Clone Wars are fantastic.
Fantastic.
Don't fight anybody.
Well, wait, I need to watch The Vampire Diaries. I will. I'll give it a shot. I'm open-minded.
Oh, you won't regret it.
Dude, I crushed The Clone Wars and Rebels in, like, record amounts of time. Like, it was, I had a coworker that was into Star Wars, and he was he's like, what season are you on? I'm like, I'm on season, like, 4 already. He's like, are you kidding me? You just started it, like, last week. Dude, you give me those 30-minute episodes, and I was losing sleep over it. I was like, just a few more episodes, getting like four hours of sleep a night, just powering through Star Wars.
Can't say I've been bitten by that bug yet. I mean, I believe it's as good as Nick tells me, but I just haven't gone down the rabbit hole.
What, Star Wars?
Yeah.
Okay, well, I mean, the original trilogy, just classic. Almost everybody's seen it. And all the people that hate Star Wars, coincidentally, have never watched it. And I think I was 5 when the prequels came out, episode 1. And then I was, 8 years old when episode 2 came out, and then 11 when episode 3 came out. So
yeah.
The nostalgia for me is, like, I love the prequels. And then as you watch them back when you're growing up, you realize that the prequels were one of the greatest, fictional political stories ever told. It's here's the Republic and they're being subverted, and the leader of the Republic is taking all of these emergency powers, and he's funding and operating both sides of a war to consolidate power. And then the Republic becomes the Empire, and it just slowly morphs into this thing. And like looking back at it, you see the genius. They're so caught up in bureaucracy and they're so, war torn that they grant all these powers and give up their rights until it turns into this thing. So it really is like the story of every empire and, you know, even the US.
It's true. It is true.
Interesting. So what do you guys think about all of these half-assed mask mandates being lifted? But it's not fully. It's not like, you know, it's only for fully vaccinated. No public facilities, no schools. Like they can't just say like go back to normal. It has to be like this weird, we're still in control, but and what do you guys make of it?
It's I mean, I think I've said it before, like they're doing anything in their power to use social pressure to like guilt people into getting the vaccine. And, you know, they've made it like common to talk about people's medical history. You know, they're like, you know, did you get the vaccine? And like, I don't ask people if they got their tetanus shot. You know, you don't go before you go take a dump on a toilet, ask the person before you, hey, do you have herpes? Like, you know what I mean? Like, you just don't do that. So they've made it like really weird. And
I think
it's fucked. I think it's just dumb. They have no power to enforce any of this shit.
To me, it's fun. You know, the dog park that we take our dog to, the wife and I, you have to prove that the dog has their rabies shots. You have to get tags, and then they have to get basically a permit to be at the dog park so they don't bite other dogs and infect them or whatever. And I think that the vaccine is basically becoming like that, where when somebody's walking around without a mask on, it's like, does he have his shots? Does he have his shots? Like, we're treated like pets, you know? So, yeah, I see more and more people going back to normal, more normal. And then there are the people that, despite all of the CDC guidelines saying what we've known all along, that obviously if you've had it or if you've had the vaccine, you don't have to wear a fucking mask. But there are still the people that are clinging onto it because it's their na-na. It's their blanket that makes them feel safe.
Yeah, that's you know, so Illinois just announced it today. So our overlord JB Pritzker announced, like, vaccinated people don't wear masks, which, once again, how is this enforced? Are we doing the COVID passport, or do we have to walk around with a tag, you know, to say we have our shots? But no, it's a soft enforcement. It's just like, you know, they're just going to see who's going to listen, really. But they did, like, you know, all public facilities still need it, all public transportation and public schools, which that's the one that bothers me the most, that I was hoping would be lifted, because it makes me sick to my stomach watching my daughter wear a compliance muzzle every day. Now, granted, they have 2 weeks left of school, but it's like they still can't give us the satisfaction to know we ended the school year without a mask mandate. They won't give it to us. Right. So you're being suspended all summer to find out if next fall they're going to have to wear the muzzle or not.
Yeah, they're going to pull the rug out. I have no doubt in my mind. Just the same way as most employers, since most employers are going to have a really hard time mandating the vaccine because they may end up being liable for any adverse health effects from it because they mandated it. So most employers probably won't mandate it, but what they will do is they'll still make you wear the mask because they don't want to be liable if you get sick with the COVID. So I did enjoy this quote by Walter Kern, and I shared this on Facebook just to upset some folks, and it did, including some relatives. It said, as the masks go away, a lot of Americans are going to miss the ability to classify, shame, and despise one another at first sight. And that pretty much sums it up for me. Because yeah, it's true. The yeah, 100% weak,
true.
These weak, low-status people are enjoying their moment of asserting power and dominance over the usual independent, you know, kind of free-spirited types. They've never had this moment before. And they're enjoying every second of it. And you best believe they will not give this up without a fight.
Yeah. I mean, that's, you know, I talk to my 8-year-old all the time, and like, I try to get a feel of, you know, how are your peers reacting to this in class? And she's just very clear that they all hate it. They think it's stupid. They don't understand why they can't get too close to each other. They want to know when it's going to end. And they don't feel like they're in danger, at least the group she runs with in our small town, you know, but, and I just reaffirmed that. I'm like, yeah, don't be afraid of the air. Don't be afraid to get too close to your friends. This is all just theater. They're just trying to show they're doing everything they can to be safe, but you're in no danger. Please always keep that in your mind.
Right. Yeah, it's, I don't know. It's wild times, and I've just come to expect to be let down. You know, I think the last time I got my hopes up was when Trump said we were going to be open by Easter in 2020, and then that quickly went up in flames, and from there on out I was like, yeah, I'm done.
I
don't have any faith in any of this.
What's funny about that statement was when we had the epidemiologist Dr. Knut Fitkowski on, he said, like, that would have been the right thing to do, was open up back then, like somebody suggested about Easter. And he said that would have got us to herd immunity the fastest. This guy, I mean, what does he know? He's just an epidemiologist at 35 years and CEO of a medical company. But he was saying that would have been the most effective route. And once again, I'm not saying I know that for a fact, or like I'm an expert on any of this, but he's the most qualified person I've spoken to since the pandemic broke out, and had a pretty compelling argument.
Well, I think what's going on with all of the lifting, I think it's more related to the economy, because they're seeing the jobs report that came out a week or two ago that was far weaker than expected. We had the single greatest month of inflation since 2008 and the single greatest year over year rise in inflation since, I think, 1981, when they had, I mean, the only way they combated the inflation of the 70s and early 80s was by Paul Volcker raising interest rates above 20%, which would, if they put rates at 5%, we're going down the drain. But if they put them at 20%, I mean, we're talking like worldwide economic collapse. Like the dollar, you know, the federal government can afford nothing. Like they can't make any of their, like the military budget is out the window. Or because they're going to have to resort to printing every penny of it. So the military budget is out the window. The U.S. empire collapses. Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid payments done. Good. Everything crashes overnight, and we go into hyperinflation. Such a
shitty Ponzi scheme.
Hey, I mean, yeah, when you've been,
no, it, you, it really
that actually when FDR implemented that, that might have been the time for the American people to get a little upset.
Yeah,
like borderline 1776 levels of upset with all the shit he put us on this course. It was a path of no return.
Oh, it's fucking us almost 100 years later. I mean, it's like seriously, it's mathematically broken. Where, you know, people, it's like the third pillar of American politics, where even when Republicans run who call themselves constitutional conservatives, they vow not to touch Social Security. Like they won't push the retirement age back. They won't say we're going to phase it out, even though they're I'm assuming the true believers understand how you know futile it is. I mean, when you look at the revenue, where even if you talk to somebody, if you talk to anybody about it and you go, okay, you make the case to me how this was set up to where people collect at the age of 65 when back then they only lived to be 68, I think was the average age of death. And the birth rate was expanding in such a way where you had, I think it was 20 employees per retiree. And now it's down to, well, I think it's 6 or 7 employees per retiree, and the birth rate is still declining. So it's and people are living way longer. It's mathematically broken. And the two, I think they have a, they call it the Social Security Trust Fund, which actually Gene Epstein did a fantastic debate where he debated this woman about Social Security solvency and the security of it. And they have a $3 trillion trust fund full of assets that fund Social Security. So they go, no, we got this pool where we can keep paying out. Don't you guys worry about that. You know what the trust fund is made of, what their assets are?
Is it all their government US, bonds?
It's U.S. Treasury bonds. So basically they put this money aside, they spent the money and then wrote themselves an IOU. And they go, no, that's in-house debt. That's like if you take $20 out of the cupboard from your spouse and you tell them you got them, it's like that. And it's like, what? No, it's not. How is that possibly a good analogy? So they spent the money and then they put IOUs in there. So essentially it's the scene from Dumb and Dumber where the mobster guy in the hotel room at the end of the movie, where he's like, he takes the briefcase and he pops it open and all the IOUs come out and he's like, well, where's the money? And then Jim Carrey's like, those, sir, are IOUs. Those are just as good as money. I mean, that's what it is.
It's funny that everybody laughs at it when it's in a Hollywood movie, but we treat them as experts when they're doing it with our socialized retirement fund.
I think we should jack up the interest rates to 20%. Let's get this show on the road, because I think was it Peter Schiff that said it, like, it's better to eat it now than keep this going. We've already kept it going too long.
You have to get the hangover over with at some point. We can't keep partying. Like, there has to be a hangover. We got to process all the damage, all the bad decisions, and rebuild, and hopefully we can recover. But I don't go for the collapsitarian argument, because I think that could be a very devastating thing to a lot of people.
I'm not opposed.
Well, I mean, it has to happen at some point. And Yeah, I mean, I guess better, the sooner the better. It has to be.
It's not even about how anybody feels about it. It's just an inevitability. It's sure. like,
right.
guys, we have this hurricane coming, and I'm just really anti-hurricane. You know, it's like, okay, who gives a fuck how you feel about hurricanes? There's a hurricane coming, so I don't really give a shit how you feel about it. Doesn't really right. matter.
But there is the crowd that cheers it on, where it's like. I mean, yeah, I see the argument, but it's like it's also kind of naive to underestimate the amount of like actual damage that'll do to a lot of people. And it's really tragic and sad.
Oh yeah, I'm not looking forward to it. I'm just right. not denying that there's a hurricane coming, and it's Category 5.
Right.
And I've made the analogy on the podcast before, I think, where in Game of Thrones they're all squabbling over political power. Meanwhile, winter is coming, which comes like once in a generation. And with it comes all of these White Walkers, and they're coming to decimate everybody that's squabbling over who gets to claim the throne. So the whole thing is winter is coming, and it doesn't matter how any, like what is going on with our politics, because this much greater threat that transcends it is on its way. And that's what, I mean, a lot of people have criticism of Peter Schiff, and I think fairly, that he has, you know, hyperinflation's always just around the corner for the last 10 years.
He's Chicken Little. It.
Yeah, yeah, but the problem is people are going to, and then they say, well, yeah, a broken clock is right twice a day. So when this disaster happens, well, of course, you know, Peter Schiff has been saying it's a month away for a decade. And it's like, okay, that's fair and that's true. However, he did say it was coming when all of these other economists and mainstream pundits are saying that everything is solid and it's not going to happen. So he was more right, even though he's, you know, trying to be Nostradamus with a timestamp. But at least he's saying it is going to happen. They're denying that it's even going to happen or that it's here.
That's fair.
True.
So anyways, I did want to let you guys know, and this will be available to anyone who's going to Freedom Fest. We are making our own T-shirts. We're going to do them in-house, actually. We're going to get them made and then realize my wife has a Cricut, which she can make the logo. And then we just had to buy a you know, heat press to do shirts. So we ordered that up. And they're in the works. So Tyler should have one for his appearance at Childerberg. And we should go ahead and possibly even sell a couple at ours. So do you guys like the slogan idea for the back?
What was it again?
Raw dogging?
No, it's so we have the Pulse of the Wall logo on the front. And on the back it says, it feels so much better without a mask.
Oh, I like it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought so. I knew it was something related to raw dogging.
Yeah, I mean, it's just about raw dogging, but it's just as, you know, but it's PG raw dogging.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we're going to get those made and we'll have them at Frida Fest and maybe get them on a website one of these days if we can build in.
We need to get some yoga pants for the Freedom MILFs too.
Those aren't cheap.
But it's a worthwhile investment.
Yeah, I'm all about the yoga pants idea. I think that's got some legs, no pun intended.
Yeah.
All right. So I did want to do a propaganda of the week for you guys. Do you want to take a gander at that now?
Let's do it.
Angel of darkness is upon you. Stuck a needle on your arm.
Health officials are getting creative in how they convince hesitant Americans to get the COVID vaccine. According to the CDC, the daily average for vaccinations has dropped 20% since the start of the month. A worrying trend. Omar Villafranca is following this for us in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Omar, good morning to you. In West Virginia, they will actually give you a $100 savings bond if you get the shot. What incentives are being offered there where you are?
Well, Tony, they're still doing mass vaccination sites like this one here behind me, but for some people, it's just not convenient. So they're doing things like shots for shots, and think of that as a vodka for a vaccine at the bar. And they're having to get creative because less than one third of Louisiana's population has received the first dose.
Where did you get your first shot?
I got it at a local bar.
23-year-old Brandon Bro went to a bar with friends and ended up vaccinated.
It was a shot for shot night.
In Baton Rouge, the Shots for Shots program is run by Relief, a telehealth company. The Shots program came to this bar on Tuesday night where bartender Curtis Johnson had a shot waiting for him. Moderna, straight from the syringe.
Why didn't you go to a vaccination site or a doctor's office?
Well, the convenience is what spoke to me most today. The fact that it's literally 5 feet away from me. I work late nights. I've either just never found the time or just been too exhausted to go out.
That type of convenience makes a difference in reaching the unvaccinated, says Relief CEO Vishal Vasanji.
People trust people that they're familiar with. And so, you know, if we're friends, I could come to you and say, hey, the process was easy. Here's what it is. And it might get you one step closer to getting vaccinated.
But success varies by night. At Soji, only a handful of people got the shot.
Do these type of events help, even if it's just a few people?
They do. They absolutely do.
Dr. Joseph Cantor is the Louisiana State Health Officer. Right now, his state is administering less than 70% of the first doses delivered from the federal government.
We're taking the kitchen sink approach here. No idea is bad. Every idea is worth considering.
Cantor says when it comes to the vaccine hesitant, most are not against vaccination.
Most people just have questions. They're on the fence. They want to talk it out. They want to wait and see. It's all about empowering trusted messengers in communities.
Cantor says the best messenger tends to be people's own doctors. Okay. And that's the case for 42-year-old Katie Olligood, who has not gotten vaccinated.
Are you a hard no?
No, I'm not a hard no.
You're not a hard
no. I'm not a hard no. I was a hard no initially. I believe in science and I believe in masks. I don't know how I feel about the vaccine. I don't get flu shots, but our kids are fully vaccinated, so it's not that. So that's just kind of where I am.
State health officials admit that people are tired of hearing from the government telling them to come get a shot. So now they're trying to move their message to new people, church leaders, so they can get that message on Sunday, and the Saturday football faithful. They want to get people involved with LSU football to try to get that message out. Keep in mind, LSU football and SEC football is pretty big down here in Louisiana. And
okay, so first of all, you know, I get a 0.25% commission for all Pfizer, Moderna, and J&J vaccines. So I don't know. You do the math, cocksucker. How many, 0.25% of 200 million shots I'm making mad bank. And, you know, this is, it's really something we got to get it into the churches, the football teams. I don't give a shit who, you know, everybody's got to get the shot because Daddy Fauci's bank account depends on it.
So my favorite part, make no mistake, these are the people who brought you the Me Too movement. Their new idea is let's premeditatively target people who are inebriated and coerce them into making an irreversible health decision while they were under the influence and unable to drive a vehicle. Let's sell them on an irreversible medical procedure.
I guarantee you the five people that they said at that one bar that got it were all people that just did like six tequila shots.
Yeah.
They're like, you want to get a shot? What are they like? Whatever. You know,
well, is it safe to get a shot?
I don't think it's fucking ethical.
Put in my blood when I'm drinking. Like, I wouldn't want anything in my bloodstream. Like, if you have your blood spinned out.
You know what I would tell them?
Yeah, and you're going to be hungover the next morning.
I'd be like, all right, I'll get this shot if you go get me a pack of menthols. I'll suck this baby.
Oh, man. But, dude, I just could, like, I heard about that and I was like, wow. Like, so there, can there at least be a Me Too movement for people who got drunk and got vaccinated? Be like, I had no idea what I was doing. All my friends talked me into it. I didn't even realize it. You know, like, seriously,
wait till
you're preying on people who lowered their inhibitions and are not in the right mind.
Is that right?
It's
they're sticking something in me.
They're sticking a fluid in you against your will that would not be there if you were sober.
Now, who knows? They might say I need an anal swab.
Now, is the person who's giving you the shot also drunk? Because that changes things.
Walk out of the bar with a needle in your forehead.
You have to make sure you're covered. Listen, we were both hammered. I gave him the shot. Okay. I mean,
yeah,
we were on a level playing field. Okay. I wasn't super happy about it either, but things happen when your inhibitions get lowered.
I love the propaganda of like, oh, it's just a convenience thing. People work during the day. They don't have time. So like, we're just going to go to the bar where, you know, obviously there's no reason why their judgment would be different here.
I bet you they gave that bartender, they're like, here's $1,000 if you let us film you getting the shot.
Right. Or it's just a college town, so it's a young kid who's probably leaning left that was ready to get vaccinated anyways. So
take the corn syrup.
Oh, it's just hysterical. And then, yeah, the thing like, oh, we're just, they're tired of hearing, they're tired of being propagandized by the governments. Now the government wants to propagandize the churches and the sports. It's like, there's kind of change the avenues of propaganda.
Well, they said like this stuff wasn't working in the South and like urban communities. Yeah. They're like, it's been totally ineffective. And I'm like, yeah, what did you expect after people realize what the hell you did with the Tuskegee experiment?
But never has the, I mean, this is only our third propaganda of the week, but the Skynyrd song leading into it was perfect for that one. Stuck a needle in your arm, you fool, you.
Do they have to have you sign some type of form or something?
Oh, there's, yeah. Because
There's no way that you can just walk up after like 17 beers and just be like, yeah, give me one of those. And I'm telling you right now, that's never my first idea. That wouldn't be on my mind when I was drunk. I wouldn't be like, I want to get vaccinated. No, I'd be like, where can I get tacos?
Mm-hmm.
Like, or where can I get more booze?
Yeah, I'm going to sing some Pearl Jam at karaoke, and then I'm going to go find a Euro somewhere at 1 in the morning. Yeah, that's what exactly. I'm like, I want to get a shot. Second of all, it's not a very sanitary environment. You know, it's like when you get a medical procedure done, you want shit to be sterile and clean, and you want privacy. A bar is the last place in the world I'd ever want to get
anything.
College
town bar.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You probably get COVID when they pull out the needle and your wound is open for that split second. You probably get COVID and AIDS. Like, dude, college town bars are like, it's the grime. Next thing, they're going to be going to like frat houses. They're going to be like,
I don't know. I just felt like
sharing. Yeah. You get, now, if you we get were a, them, a beer bong and a joint for a jab.
If we were them, I think it would be a lot of fun to come up with different campaigns to get every last person vaccinated. Honestly, I could see why they're doing it. It seems like a lot of fun. Like, you know, they have a game going, you know, at the CDC or wherever, WHO. Like, they're trying to see whose campaign gets the most hesitant people vaccinated. You could have fun with it. I think so.
Did you catch the part where they said people under between age 16 and 35 can get a $100 treasury bond if they get the vaccine? Like, they're also doing that. What you were just talking about with the IOUs, like, they're giving IOUs out to people.
Do you want my worthless toilet paper? My toilet paper IOU?
It only $100. It's like, here, go be a guinea pig for $100.
If they give me a pallet full of gold bars, like a pallet full of them, I'll do it. But I'm only getting the Johnson & Johnson because I want blood clots.
Yeah, I don't know. It's crazy world we live in, but that's normalized. And my favorite part about all of this is how the Occupy Wall Street crowd has somehow transitioned into freelance, unpaid salesmen for three big pharma companies.
Yeah.
Same people.
It's such a fall from grace for the left. Remember when, like, after 9/11, they were so anti-war and so resistant to like the government and all this stuff. Like, they actually stood for something, and now they're just a bunch of pathetic mouthpieces for the state. They're embarrassing. They need to, like, I honestly, like we talked about with Aaron, I would rather them be full on Marxist Leninists, because at least they'd fucking stand for something.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, like, some of the Bernie Bros. I got one buddy in particular who's he's kind of a left anarchist, and he's pro 2A just because he's gone all the way left. And he's not getting the vaccine either. He didn't vote for Biden because he knew what they did to Bernie. So I'm like, there's still the fringe crowd over there that isn't buying all the bullshit. So you got to find those guys and ally with them. That's the diagonal unity we need to work with.
It's true. So there's an account on Twitter called Biden Voters Posting Their L's. And all it is just them just sharing people like saying, well, I can't believe I voted for this guy. I thought he was going to change things.
Well, he changed a lot of things.
Because he just sold like $75 billion worth of weapons to Israel. And they're like, I thought he was different.
God, it's pathetic.
But. Yeah, no, but I mean, with the Biden administration, when I was, I think actually Curtis Yarvin made this point, that if you're a Trump supporter, Biden winning the election this past year was not the worst thing in the world, because when the wheels come off, just the way the public thinks, like we understand, people who listen to this podcast understand that when the economy starts circling the drain, which it's doing right now, when that happens, that this is the result of decades of bad monetary policy and fiscal policy and all of these things and trade. And this isn't just, oh, Biden decided to raise capital gains tax and now the economy crashes and we have hyperinflation from his stimulus bill, even though, I mean, he's, don't get me wrong, I mean, both Trump and Biden were hypocritical spenders, but I mean, Biden really stomped on the gas when it came to the spending. Like he has two separate $2 trillion bills that he wants passed right now, the stimulus and then infrastructure. And you know, Republicans are going to just say, oh, look at Biden, you know, all of a sudden we're concerned about the deficit again. So it's really whoever's at the wheel when the wheels come off is who's going to be held responsible in the minds of the American public, when in reality, it's been a bipartisan effort for decades that has been leading up to this. So when the wheels come off, it's not the worst thing that Biden is sit there looking confused and people blame it on him. You know, I mean, it's not a bad thing, but that's why I think with the mask mandates and everything, they're probably influencing the CDC. They're saying, okay, we got to get people back to work. We have to, you know, get this inflation under control. So let's get our productivity up. But you could tell that's kind of the thought process behind it.
Oh yeah. It was purely political.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you know, those are the kind of people though that you say like, well, they don't pay attention, but they're very emotional and quick to react when something volatile and fast does happen. But, and then people like us and people who listen to this podcast, we pay attention to this stuff, even in the off season, like compared to sports, like I'm not going to weigh in my opinion about March Madness because I can't even name like more than five college basketball teams, period. Like, I don't know anything about the sport of basketball. I know nothing about college basketball and I know nothing about March Madness. So I'm not going to get emotionally invested and start like putting my opinion on social media during March just because it's the thing that's in. Yet everybody feels the need to do that during an election year. And I was talking to a buddy of mine last week, talking to him, telling him about the podcast. And I was like, well, basically, this is no different than if we were a bunch of sports nuts. Like me and my buddies, we're really into this stuff. We're really into economics. We're into the current events. We're into the history of the country and how all this progressed. And we really enjoy talking about it. I said, it's just like if you're talking about NFL or NBA or anything like that. The only difference is this is much more divisive. It can be dangerous if you cross a line and could get you fired if you say the wrong thing. Because it's just like such controversial stuff to have different opinions on, but it's all tribalism. It's no different than sports.
In the MMA fandom community, we have a word for people who simply jump in for the big moments and are super opinionated. They're called filthy casuals. And right now our country with political discourse is mostly populated by filthy casuals. And yeah, that's kind of an allegory I think makes sense.
Yeah. And I do think like Joe Rogan's made the point where, you know, most people just don't have time, like, or they don't want to make time. Cause look at how many hours we've spent, whether it's reading or listening or watching to like learn more. Like most people don't want to dedicate that time. They'd rather watch Kim Kardashian twerk on YouTube or, you know, watch a TV show or read a book about anything else, because I mean politics is kind of boring.
Well, here's what gets me is when somebody is very opinionated and you have a piece of information that is really compelling that presents a counterpoint of view and people are just not interested in seeing it. Every time I talk to somebody or if somebody's talking about climate change, I'll talk about nuclear energy because if you're worried about carbon emissions, it's the single greatest thing we could do is, you know, transition to nuclear, and we would greatly reduce CO2, which I'm not sold that it's actually the worst thing in the world, you know, basically plant food, but what do I know? I'm not pretending to have the answers, but I do know that nuclear energy is a fantastic energy source. And with modern technology, it's actually a really small, the idea that something's going to go catastrophically wrong is really small. And when you tell people about nuclear energy, or I'll send them a YouTube link or something like, hey, you should check this out. It's a presentation on nuclear energy. Yeah, and there's even this new element, or I don't know if it's an element or a compound or whatever the fuck. Unlike that lady in the video, I don't follow science. I just know a little bit. But thorium is a new thing where apparently it's exponentially safer than uranium and traditional forms of nuclear power. And they're not interested in the slightest. It's like, wait, if you actually care about this, I'm not even saying that you have to agree with me. I'm asking you to just hear this out. I'm not the one telling you about it. I'm appealing to people who actually are nuclear physicists and shit. And they're disinterested in hearing it. So I don't really believe that you're passionate about this because you're not even the slightest interested in hearing anything else.
So no. You want to hear something to the, even the White House is rejecting what you just said, Nick. The White House environmental justice advisors express opposition to nuclear and carbon capture projects. So they have an environmental justice advisory now in the White House. So that's good.
Classic.
We've got a lot going for us. Yeah, so they don't want to do anything that involves nuclear, carbon capture, or expanding the capacity for fossil fuel production, despite gas shortages and everything else. So they want you to suffer, and they want be poor and taxed to death.
Is the environment racist yet?
Oh, that's out there. That is out there.
Yeah,
something about how hurricanes wipe out people in India or whatever, more
because of white disproportionately.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because of Charlottesville. It's all connected, man. They're like the biggest conspiracy theorists. Like, they're bigger than conspiracy theorists than Alex Jones or anybody. Like, they think that everything comes back to white supremacy. Like, the white supremacists are what the kind of fringe anti-Semitic conspiracy theorists are. Like, they're the same thing. Everything comes back to white supremacists.
Did you you mentioned it too? I forgot to comment in that video where that woman said, like, oh yeah, it was a hard no, but now I'm open. You know, I believe in science, I believe in masks. It's like, yes, I too believe in science. I believe in math and history and all sort of topics. Like, what does this mean? Yeah. I believe in science.
Like, yeah, the question is how do you extrapolate the information presented? That's
exactly like, I believe in masks.
That's like, most people don't understand data, they don't understand how, like, they don't work with it on a regular basis. And the data has been meticulously cherry picked to present the story that the CDC and those government bureaucrat shitheads want to present. And they're doing the same with all this environmental stuff too. It's all been cherry picked.
Because unless you go to chartstheyforgot.com and score a free ebook from Tom Woods.
Ding, ding, ding. So
sorry, didn't mean to cut you off.
No, you're good. You know, this whole, like, the first country that embraces, like, I think it's fifth gen nuclear reactors. Cause like right now there's only a few fourth gens out there. And a lot of our reactors are old, you know, like they're second, third gen. I don't think we've built many new ones past like the 90s maybe. But anyways, the first countries that embrace nuclear power to its full potential are gonna be the ones that get ahead.
So
I mean, there's wars that have been fought over energy. This is
so Matt Ridley had the book How Innovation Works, and he was talking about, he had a whole chapter on nuclear history. And believe it or not, there is government red tape that keeps that technology from evolving since the 1980s. There's so much red tape and regulation that in order to like re-alter a design or come up with something that's innovative and new, it would be so radically expensive to get it all passed through all the government regulation that there's no incentive. They just stop and go like, it's not worth, like, it's working. We could probably make it better now, which 40 years later, but it would cost a behemoth of money for a government to approve something different to be changed on a nuke plant. So that's why that technology has been frozen since the 80s. And it's wild because that should be going, that should be increasing with all this other technology just as fast.
Yeah.
Can while we're on the topic of energy, can we have a bitch of the week segment? Because you guys are aware of this. I'm sure most of the listeners are at this point. But Elon Musk saying that Tesla is no longer accepting Bitcoin as a payment for their vehicles because of Bitcoin mining uses electricity, and electricity is, you know, mostly made by coal burning, where it's like, okay, I don't know the actual metrics of how much electricity is used in Bitcoin mining. I think it's maybe like 0.01% of all energy that, like, that goes towards that. And it's like, dude, your cars run on electricity. Do you think they're all windmills and solar that are making your cars run?
Right.
It's such nonsense. And he's obviously, I don't know if he's being coerced or if this is just, he figures that he's reached the end of his pump and dump, because I'm really torn on Elon Musk. And sometimes I think that, okay, this guy is red pilled. He gets it. He's one of the good guys. And then you realize just how blatantly selfish he is when it comes to, you know, pumping up Dogecoin, which God knows how much he has, and he bought when it was really small, and then decided to triple his money or quadruple however early he got in, because he could do that. Elon Musk could make billions by just buying some no-name cryptocurrency and then just tweeting its name and then watch it go up 1,000% in an hour, and then he could just cash out. And yeah, why wouldn't he do that? Like, he's obviously, you know, in it for himself.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not real big on him at the moment. I'm a little upset with him over that tweet, because it's stupid. It's hypocritical and stupid. But also, he I just lost my train of thought there for a second. So he, you know, he's doing this pump and dump stuff, but I do enjoy the fact that Michael Burry, the investor who famously made a wad of cash off the 2008 mortgage crisis, is currently holding a massive short on Tesla. So keep an eye on that.
You know, I mean, when Jason Stapleton was on here, the fact, like, Tesla's stock price, like, they lose money on every car they make. It's such a, like, his stock is worth more than the next 9 auto manufacturers combined. And it's because they sell electric vehicle credits that they get from the federal government, because they have an excess, because they make only electric vehicles. So all the other car producers buy credits, these electric vehicle credits from Tesla, to meet government quotas. They made $2 billion last year. Arbitrary red tape bullshit. Like, that's what Tesla actually sells.
I have heard the argument that they're a technology company, not a car company. I don't know. I'm not sold yet. Granted, their cars are, I mean, they're awesome. They look cool. I would say at this point, they're pretty far ahead of any of the big auto manufacturers in terms of appearance and performance for electric vehicles. But I don't know, man. I've been saying for a few years that I think the stock should be shorted. I don't think it's worth. I don't see how it's worth more than Ford, GM, all these other companies, or Toyota, whatever.
Mm-hmm. Even if they're a technology company and that's the justification for their stock price and valuation and everything, shouldn't they be profitable? Isn't it? It's weird. Companies, I think, I don't know if Twitter is profitable or not. I think they are now, maybe, but I knew that for a while, Facebook was the only social media company that was profitable, because Snapchat has been losing money every year since their inception. Where people are just, they have all this investor money because people think that one day they're going to be profitable once they can figure out how to monetize. And I think that is the biggest bubble. Like, what percentage of, you know, what does the US make? It's like, we make agriculture and we make technology. And most of our technology is either not profitable or it's very little profit involved. And I think that's the big bubble. I think we have a big tech bubble, ironically, you know, 20 years later. I don't get it. I don't buy the idea that Tesla is actually that valuable.
Yeah.
Well, they're not like Apple. Like, you know, Apple's sitting on like a war chest of money. Like, Apple's a profitable company that is loaded with cash. Like, they have surplus cash. So if they run through hard times, or they can fund R&D, they can do whatever. Like, that's a company you want to invest in.
There was a stat that a couple years ago, it said Apple has enough cash on hand to buy like the NBA, MLB, the NFL, like all the major sports or leagues, NASA, and then like a bunch of other ridiculous shit like Pepsi. I don't know. It was a ton of massive corporations and still have like X amount of billion in the bank. Like, it's unfathomable how much money they're worth and they have on hand. Like, they're worth way more than the US government by far.
Yeah. Wait, their revenue. Wait, no, I mean, well, So even before COVID, I mean, the federal government was spending like $3.5 trillion of tax revenue every year. I mean, they definitely have more, they're more liquid. They definitely
yeah, so it's
are
like, cash available or something. Let me see if I can
find it. Okay. So, cause in terms of revenue, I mean, the federal government is actually the most, they're the most broke ass bitches in the world. Cause who else is that much in debt? Like they have the lowest net worth of any institution in history when you think of it that way.
Yeah.
I mean, really think about it. Like who has ever been that broke? Nobody. They're broke, but they, you know, make enough money to pay the bills.
Also, I remember the other point I was going to make about Elon Musk is that he wants to talk about Bitcoin mining being so dangerous to the environment. Do you guys know who the number one polluter in the world is?
Uncle Sam's military.
Yep, exactly. No one wants to talk about that, though. They want to save the world, but no one wants to talk about that.
Not at all.
It continues to blow my mind that not one environmentalist.
Yeah, so you know, it's just stuff going on with both Tesla, you know, all that stuff going on with them with the electric vehicles. And then this pipeline getting shut down. You know what gets no airtime that Nick and I have quite a bit of experience with is compressed natural gas vehicles. I don't know how this has been like such a well-kept secret, but the big three and Honda have made them from the factory since the mid-90s. Nick and I drove on natural gas for years at a time. We both had ex-squad car Crown Vicks. Mine ran on gasoline and natural gas. You just flip a rocker switch and could switch fuels. Nick's Crown Vic ran only on natural gas. His motor never saw a drop of gasoline. And great performance, great gas mileage, way cleaner than anything. Like you can go 15,000 miles without changing your oil. And you go to change it and it still looks like brand new oil. It's just broken down, so you change it. There's no carbon, so it still looks like honey after 15,000 miles. And these are made from the factory. But all the cars that we bought that were built to run on it, were all ex-government cars. They never offered it to the public. It was like government vans, government trucks, and cop cars.
Yeah, and if we hit another, I mean, if oil really goes crazy here, then I'm buying I'm going to get a CNG Cavalier or Crown Vic or something. Or they make Honda Civics that are CNG. And where I work in Wisconsin, every Quick Trip has natural gas quick fills. So. I mean, yeah, they're pretty awesome. And I think the octane rating is something, the equivalent's like 130 octane. So you could get away running crazy compression if you wanted to change the heads and pistons and everything and make more power. So, I mean, it's weird that it never became more widely adopted, but a lot of municipal vehicles do use CNG. You'll see a lot of, if you pay attention, you'll see a lot of like city vehicles or even dump trucks and buses in cities that use them a lot of times because they are lower emissions. So they help a lot with smog in densely populated areas.
Yeah. It was
we have so much natural gas in North America too.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing is that was the argument. Cause we started digging into it heavily. My dad's been running on it. He's still on it for probably going on 15 years now, 13, 15 years. And it's, we've done a lot of research and talked to a lot of the biggest names in the conversion industry. And they said, like, the government says we don't have the infrastructure to sustain it. It's like, bullshit. Every house has natural gas. Like, that's where we were filling up is my dad bought a compressor and it would do like 1 gallon per hour. So you get home, you plug your car in like a battery charger. You wake up in the morning, you got a full tank. It costs like 45 to 60 cents a gallon by the time you factor in the electricity for the compressor and the natural gas. So it was back when gas was high. I mean, it saved me a ton of money when I was in when we were in trade school.
Oh yeah, because if you spend $200 a month on gas, I mean, and you can get that down to $30 or $40. I mean, that's huge. That's like having that's a car payment. That's a $10,000 car payment every month that you're saving. You do that for a couple of years. Think about how much money you're banking. You could buy some rapidly depreciating Bitcoin and then, you know, it shoots back up. And even if it doesn't shoot back up, you still save money.
Yeah. And that's, I'll probably still be on it right now. My only reason is my house where I live now is on propane. So, and you can run motors on propane, but it's just so expensive right now. So, and it makes less power. So that's why I find myself with a Prius. Unfortunately. Got to do what you got to do.
Do you have a coexist sticker on it?
No, like I say mine's the only Prius in existence without any bumper stickers. That's how you know it's mine when you see it. I thought about doing like all like Ron Paul 2012 and just all kinds of just libertarian stuff that they would you'd never see on a Prius, but I don't. I just don't like you know, pissing anybody off on the road. I just want to blend in and not be recognized.
Yeah, I try to go like as inconspicuous as possible. Yeah. That's why I drive a generic soccer mom mobile. No political stickers on it. No nothing. Actually, if you really want to be inconspicuous, you'd put like a LGBTQ plus sticker on there. They can't pull you over then.
Yeah.
You're immune.
Yeah, no. I mean, I think I'm the only guy in, that owns a Prius that also has a full-size Chevy pickup and a antique Buick that shoots raw fuel out of the tailpipes just to shoot light on fire for fun. So I think I own that demographic exclusively.
Yeah. But I do think you should, you know, to kind of stick with it, you should at least get a MacBook. So that way you can maybe pick up Starbucks. I don't know.
Yeah.
That would help you blend in with the Prius crowd too.
Yeah.
It'd make up for you owning a truck.
For sure. So, yeah, I mean, I guess that's Nick had to dip out. We ran a little late today, so Nick had to hop off. But I guess we can call it a little early episode. You got anything else you want to close on?
We can end on some interesting news here. And this is about the last thing I got. CNN decided to cut ties with a writer who had praised Hitler for years. So CNN says it has cut ties with a writer who took to social media to praise Adolf Hitler and his admiration for the Nazi leader who killed more than 6 million Jewish people was well established prior to this weekend's social media post. He was a Pakistani-based CNN contributor whose byline has appeared on the network's website at least 54 times. So he wrote in a now-deleted post, "The world today needs a Hitler." And they said, "Due to his abhorrent statements, he will not be working with CNN in any capacity again." Now, this is just one of several praising Hitler and criticizing Israel in very controversial terms. He's been doing this as far back as 2014. So I'm wondering, he claims on his LinkedIn account that he has been contributing to CNN for more than 7 years. So CNN, they were calling Donald Trump a fascist, but they had one working for him.
Yeah. I mean, what's their vetting process there?
I know, right? It's like, I mean, he's a verified user on Twitter, just throwing out just pure hate.
Wow. Dude, yeah. I don't know. They're a propaganda machine. They don't have principles or morals. So,
no,
you know, not. I mean, the Nazis didn't know how to propagandize people. So maybe that's why he was there.
Yeah, maybe they found him useful for that, I guess.
Yeah.
But
so anyhow,
that's all we'll, I got today.
Yeah. So you'll be at Childerberg. Right?
Yes, sir. A
couple more weeks here. Getting pretty close.
Yeah.
Got to get you your t-shirt made. And then we have Freedom Fest, July 21st through 24th, Rapid City, South Dakota. Please come on out and see us there. And, yeah, like and follow on Twitter. Paul's to the walls with a Z on the wall.
With a Z, yep.
And Tyler's at Schlitz_beer. And please rate and review on iTunes. I won't harass you this time. Just you know what to do.
Yeah, and if any Freedom MILFs out there want yoga pants, you got to let us know. We got to get some market feedback. The market will provide with proper feedback.
Freedom MILFs, come to Freedom Fest, and you will get yourself a free set of Pulse to the Wall yoga pants. Peace.
There you go.